Inside Lacrosse Podcast.
Thanks for coming back to the Inside Lacrosse MLL Podcast on a Friday morning, Friday afternoon at this point, Kyle. You are wiped out after a full week of camp. I am a little bit fresher, as it were, but knee-deep in the recruiting issue of the Inside Lacrosse magazine. So we are going to do our best to bring you the best educated as possible MLL podcast. What do you think the odds are that we meet that standard?
50-50, max.
50-50. So, yeah, it's so funny that people call us out for being ill-prepared, and, you know, the measures that we took to rectify that could only be called half measures. But we're going to power through. We are in a unique position because one of the games of this week that we typically preview has already occurred with the Denver Outlaws dispatching, is a word that I would like to use, with their 17-13 win over the Boston Cannons last night. The Boston Cannons is who they dispatched. And, yeah, kind of shook up the, you know, I guess middle part of that playoff projection bracket, particularly as, you know, people start to think about championship favorites and stuff like that. Let's start there, then we will bounce back to the week before, and then we'll bounce back to the rest of this week with a couple of interesting sidebars mixed in. What were your thoughts on last night's game?
Before the game was even played, I was talking to a friend of mine, and he's like, hey, who do you think is going to win tonight? And I was like, do you see the top part of my pinky right here where the nail is? I'll bet that entire part of my digit that the Cannons lose tonight. I mean, and they did. So it was good.
And where was that motivation or certainty coming from?
Oh, it was just, I mean, watching them play, looking at, you know, some of the numbers, like they just fold in the fourth quarter. They don't do well out of timeouts. They have been forcing feeds to the middle of the field like no other team I've seen in a long time. I mean, they're crowding the crease. They're not attacking from X at all. They score on the break really well. That's what one of the best things they do, but I think they're just kind of wearing down. And, you know, I think actually the most surprising thing is you definitely saw, even though our assessment had a great game, but you kind of saw that maybe they miss Max Quinzani. It just kind of just occurred to me that like that might be the issue. Like just a guy, like a garbage guy that is just so reliable and can catch anything and really just cleans up a lot of messes. I mean, maybe they miss him a lot more than anyone thought they would. That's kind of, I mean, my impression, that's kind of what just popped in. A couple guys, you know, Mike Stone didn't have a great game. Buchanan didn't have a great game. Obviously, Rabel didn't have the greatest game. But, and I guess when those three guys aren't on, you're not going to win. But, like, Poske didn't have a great game either. So you put all that together, and it's just not. And Jordan Burke was decidedly human.
Well, and ultimately, you know, there's championship, you know, defending champions always get a little bit of a longer leash in terms of, you know, whether it's their struggles. And certainly, you know, the Cannons were a team that, and this is kind of the question that I'm building toward, you know, really did toward the end of, you know, that 2011 season and in years prior as well demonstrate the fact that they were, you know, the beneficiaries of, you know, cohesion and solid coaching. You know, I think that the thing that you may have seen, or may start to have seen over the 6-5 campaign at this point is, you know, you mentioned it, and certainly there are a lot of factors, the lack of dynamism as a result of no Max Quinzani when he does so much for you, including scoring that, you know, pivotal goal at the end of the semifinal game in the rain last year. You know, but this is a team that, is it struggling from, you know, a change in leadership and realizing that, you know, Bill Day probably deserves a little bit more credit than maybe he received for what he was able to do with this Cannons team?
I mean, at first with BD, I didn't really think, you know, when he started coaching with the Cannons, I didn't think it was like that great of a, he was doing that great of a job, but.
Is this going to be like a Doc Rivers analogy?
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty close, to be honest with you. It's pretty close. He had to build up his rapport. And you can't just like plug a guy into a team that was so, had such a great relationship with their past coach and expect it to work just because he's an assistant for a couple of years. I mean, that's just a fact. That doesn't happen in any sport. It's very tough to replicate that. I'm not going to put the blame solely at Duffy's feet at all. I'm not going to do that. That's not the right thing to do, but it seems like there's definitely something missing. And players are visibly frustrated on the field. the entire time. Like, especially when they're down, Boston does not play well when they're down. They really don't. That's one of the things I try to illustrate in the column this week. And I at this point, if they don't get another win, I don't think they're going to make the playoffs. I don't want to like make that declaration, but like, I mean, Denver and Chesapeake really have, you know, beaten them up and pushed them down.
Well, 6-8 is not going to make the playoffs. I mean, you're not saying anything there that's going to surprise anybody. The question is, do they have a win left on their roster, on their schedule?
I mean, maybe they have one more. You know, it's so hard to tell with them in terms of like, who do they have left to play? I mean, they have...
They're at Chesapeake, at Ohio, and then they host Ohio at the end of the season.
Well...
It's a relatively favorable schedule.
Yeah. I would say they're probably going to win two of those against Ohio, and they're probably going to lose to Chesapeake again, even though they're playing at home. I mean, just being honest, I'm pretty sure that's going to happen. Chesapeake's just playing a lot better. Denver really looks... I mean, not to take away from Denver. Denver looked really good. Boston just playing like a defending champion. And that's the bottom line. You know, they're not scoring when they have to score. They're not scoring clutch goals, and they're not scoring goals they should be scoring. They're settling for a lot of stuff, and they're feeding the crease, and there's too many people on the crease. I don't know why you have two people on the crease. We have Matt Posse, who's worth 2.5 people by himself, goal-scoring-wise, on the crease. It's one of the greatest, probably is, at this point, the greatest crease finisher in the history of the game. I mean, he's amazing, but he does one thing. So you have to feed him the ball. And if you don't do that, he's not going to be able to do his thing. It's a big struggle.
Yeah, it's pretty wild. But you're right. I mean, I think there's some benefit in flipping the script right here, talking about the Denver Outlaws who, you know, after probably, it's amazing to think about this in retrospect because there were so many teams had tumultuous off seasons. But, you know, Denver had the most significant changeover in so many places. You know, whether it was personnel, you know, with, particularly losing Seabold and Westervelt, you know, whether it was injuries with guys like Eric Martin, whether it was, you know, in the front office with a new GM, new coach, you know, the whole nine yards. In you know, people have made a big deal out of this attendance, you know, their attendance dip after setting records last season. You know, they had a changeover in management there as well. This is a very different Denver team, and here they are 8-3. And you know, I don't want to jump on it too soon. Brendan Mondorf has 45 points through nine games. He's played 9 games this year. Paul Rabil has 56 points in 11 games. Paul Rabil is averaging just over 5.5 points per game. Brendan Mondorf is averaging exactly 5.5 points per game. Just over 5 and then 5. MVP race. A little bit more competitive, heated than you might have expected 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago, when Rabil was putting up ridiculous numbers.
I mean, when you look at it, it's like, is the MVP race all about numbers? Do you factor in the team's record, you know, stuff like that? I think, and those are kind of like intangible factors that you can kind of throw in after the fact. I think Mondorf, and we talked about this many times, Mondorf's the best attackman in the game right now, and he might be the best player right now. He's definitely playing the best. He was, you know, 3-4 last night. He's just bossing the game. He made Mitch Blyle look like a rookie. Mitch Blyle had a rough night, and you know, it's tough to guard the best guy, but you know, after the season Blyle had last year where everyone kind of had him as one of the best defenders, you know, we had him really high on our top 50 players list. I don't think he's been playing up to that caliber, and Mondorf definitely made that even more apparent with his basically dismantling of him in one-on-one situations and on the break, forcing easy slides. You know, it was not typical, you know, Boston defense in that they let up a lot of stuff on the inside and from the drive, but it all starts with Brendan Mondorf. That's why Mundorf's the best. I mean, Boston's defense isn't bad. It's not great, but it's not bad. You know, Sweeney's good. You know, PT Ricci's actually improved a lot, but, you know, Brendan Mondorf tore them apart. You know, Matthews didn't do anything all night until the end when, you know, Mondorf got free and Jordan McBride got free and they got easy passes to him and he just finished the ball. That's just how it works. And Mondorf's the best. I mean, he might be the MVP. If Rabil continues to struggle like he has the last two games, you know, and Mondorf keeps putting up huge numbers, it could be a lot more even than people thought it would be.
Well, let's jump back to the week before. You mentioned Rabel struggles now extending into two games. Last week, Cannons lose to Long Island 14-11 in a game that you sunk your teeth into a little bit for your column this week on InsideLacrosse.com. I guess, you know, things centered around Parker McKee, you know, certainly you had a strong take on it. Got a really good reaction. You braced me for some hate in the commenters, and I think, you know, somebody said, beautiful article. Another said, I don't know what's gotten into you this year, but you're actually writing something smart for the first time. I mean, high praise for Kyle Devitt and his story this week.
I mean, thanks for telling me about the good comments. I don't read them anymore. I've just kind of learned my lesson. It's just not worth battling or feeling good or bad about it. You know, I do try to put a lot of work into it, and sometimes it comes up flat and sometimes it doesn't. It always seems like the columns I think that people are going to hate, they actually enjoy. And the columns that I think are awesome, that I really am proud of, everyone's just like, you are terrible. Why are you writing? You're awful. Go away. That's my commenter voice. So, you know, I mean, it's nice, but I think when you keep raising issues and stuff doesn't get addressed, that it has to happen. I mean, when you take a stand, you have to expect that some people are going to go against you. And I kind of thought people would go against that stand, because it's kind of like, well, they're pros and they're grown men and they're going to make decisions that, you know, are a little more physical, and they're going to do different things than players in college and stuff are going to do. It's like, listen, lacrosse isn't football. Like, I'm sorry to break that to everybody who's a giant meathead. Lacrosse isn't football. You have to deal with that. Lacrosse isn't even hockey. I mean, let's be honest. It's not either one of those sports. It's somewhere in between that and, like, I don't know, basketball. Like, guys get hit in basketball a lot, but it's not the same. You have giant metal sticks. People can be seriously injured playing lacrosse. There are warning labels on lacrosse shafts that say you can die when you play lacrosse. You know, like, you have to be cognizant of that. You have to recognize that. And that's kind of what I tried to do in the column the other day, and kind of just bring a little more attention to that. And, you know, I'm happy that people reacted to it, but it was definitely, it was a despicable act. You know, I really just don't want to give it any more attention than it already deserves. But I don't know how you take a baseball swing at someone's knee and not get suspended. I just, it's ridiculous. If you did that in a lot of other sports, you would get tossed immediately and suspended and fined.
Well, I certainly don't want to, you know, I mean, I've been on the more permissive side of aggressive plays. I have a more tolerance for, you know, I'm not as quick to point out something as being cheap. I didn't see this particular play, so, you know, I'm not gonna go overboard on this particular. But one of the things that, you know, was a little bit, you did mention and kind of comment on directly, and certainly it was mentioned in the comments of the story as well, was the fact that, you know, this happened in a New York Boston rivalry type situation. You know, to what extent do rivalry games, and I'm not certain how much exactly this is a rivalry game, how much any rivalry game exists in the MLL outside of personal rivalries, how much do rivalries allow for cheap play in your opinion, or play that you might not necessarily find in a typical game?
Allow for it, or more frequency of it?
I mean, you find, like, for instance, Pedro Martinez throwing down Don Zimmer by his head is something that in a Yankee Red Sox rivalry is chalked up to, well, that's just the Yankee Red Sox rivalry. But if, you know, 30 something man were to throw down a 65-year-old man in any other walk of life, he would be arrested. Like, what?
Well, not if that guy runs at him. Did you forget I was a Red Sox fan?
No, I didn't forget that you were a Red Sox fan. I'm asking you to put on your rational analyst cap for a second.
I gotcha. I know what you're saying. I'm being facetious. I really think that context does mean a lot in a game. And in this particular incident, the context was not there for this play to have happened. So that makes it all the more egregious. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, if there was context of, oh, this happened because two plays before this guy took a cheap shot at someone and, you know, whatever. That didn't happen. This came out of nowhere. It literally came out of nowhere. Like, you're watching the game, and then you're just like, oh, you hear Eamon McEnany just go, oh, and Paul Carcaterra just go, oh, you don't want to see that, you know, and then you're like, what are they, what are they talking about? Did they, you know, and then they showed the replay and you watched it in slow-mo and you're like, okay, he looks at the ball, he looks at Boyle, and he baseball swings his knee. Like, that's not allowed. This is not permissible in any context, even if there were context. And what I'm saying is there was no context for that, regardless of rivalry, location, all that stuff. I don't even think that the Canes' rivalry with Long Island is the biggest one in the MLL, but it's definitely a rivalry that's there and needs to. I think actually Long Island Denver is a better rivalry, to be honest with you. As far as like teams that really hate each other and always have.
Yeah, they've hated each other for a while. The Langtree Polanco feud going back several, and also Snyder being involved in that. Yeah, those were some fun games in the 08-09 window of time.
Yeah, that's a more intense rivalry. But either way, I don't think it's excusable. I don't think that it has a place, as far as that particular incident went. Now, you know, in the Denver-Boston game that just happened last night, there was a little cheapery, I'm going to run through this pick and smash your face in. Like, Belial threw a shoulder right into Poyon's face, and ref didn't call anything, running through a pick that Poyon set. And Poyon is not a large man. Mitch Belial is a fairly large man, and you can imagine how that ended for Poyon on the ground. And that didn't even get called. Like, that, I don't really have like a huge problem with that, because like it was blatant, but it wasn't like, I mean, you take a risk when you set a pick. You don't take a risk when you're like 5 feet away from a ground ball and you're looking at it and you're like inching towards it and you get whacked in the knee. Like, it's different context. Everything is context, you know, and I just didn't think there was context for this particular incident.
For those of you that don't read Kyle's columns and need a little bit of encouragement, this is the final paragraph. It contains both a really valid point, in my opinion, but also contains a hilarious analogy. It's time to grow up and control your players. He's addressing the MLL. MLL League office, you don't even have a disciplinary committee, probably because you never discipline anyone. The one-game suspension for Casey Powell came the week before the All-Star game, and at the time was akin to suspending a golden retriever for swimming in the family pool in the winter. That's awesome.
Thanks.
So let's jump back to the remainders of last week. Hamilton and Ohio Machine split. Who called that?
You did.
Yeah. So
Big Dap.
I'm not positive that I would have called each team losing at home. And that particularly is rough. I mean, you know, I don't want to jump all over Hamilton for their home field issues. You know, certainly there's, that's been done enough, but you know, Ohio is just, they've gotten some good support, and they just haven't been able to reward their home fans, and it's just a bummer to me because I like this Ohio team as it's constructed. I think that it's a team that needs time in some capacities, particularly given, you know, it's kind of offense still coming together. Steel Stanwyck has 19 points in 5 games, you know, really kind of not surprising, but tremendous output from him. You know, the time isn't necessarily on their side when it comes to their defenses. You know, guys like Greg Beiser, you know, probably don't have a ton of years left in the pencil, but, you know, just haven't been able to score wins at home and pay off the home fans. To me, that's, you know, that's kind of the bummer of a season that, you know, has probably been pretty much what you would expect from an expansion franchise that, you know, had relatively low expectations externally coming into the season.
Yeah, I mean, listen, they're an expansion team. People are kind of being, I think maybe people have been, myself included, I'll throw myself into this band of merry thieves of actual success. The expansion teams are expansion teams, people. It's the first year of the team. They don't even have philosophies. They don't have, like, identities. They're just dudes playing with each other on the field, like, for the first time. Just, hey, let's go roll the ball out. That's basically what an expansion team is. And when you look at it and you put that into a new league with new coaches for both teams, by the way, it's, what are you going to do? How is that a recipe for success? You know, people expected Charlotte to be like Denver. When Denver came into the league in 2006, that's not going to happen. It was never going to happen. And I think we were way too idealistic to expect that out of them or Ohio. So I think maybe the expectations are tempered. But, you know, Ohio, with the addition of Stanwyck, you know, they're going to get some other good guys. I think Kyle Mattis has been great for the Machine. Like, it's coming. Like it's you can see that they're actually building towards something, which maybe we didn't see for the first entire half of the season, if I'm honest. At least from them. Charlotte, you know, the same thing. Maybe I think Charlotte's actually gone down a little bit the last couple of weeks. They kind of hit that apex with that win over Chesapeake, but you know, that's what's going to happen. They're expansion teams. Like I don't know why we expected anything else. And the fact that we did is kind of a little ridiculous in hindsight.
It's definitely one of the things that, you know, I think you got to brace yourself for a little bit, certainly as a fan of the MLL. One of the things that, you know, you do have to wonder about what expansion teams can do in a couple different ways. I mean, obviously Denver, one of the most successful expansion franchises in the history of pro sports. But then, you know, the fact that you don't know what the shelf life of an unsuccessful team in the MLL really is. So there's definitely a get while the getting's good type of attitude to take to those types of programs and what they're able to do. I don't know. I mean, you know, I'm with you to a degree, but I also think that, you know, whatever. They've won two games. One of them's been at home. I don't think that this season is a loss for Ohio in any capacity. You know, and certainly they've got a lot of bright spots that they can wrap their arms around going forward. And then, you know, the last game of last week, Chesapeake 13, Rochester 7. The Bayhawks continue to move in a positive direction toward the MLL playoffs, rebounding from a loss to the Charlotte Hounds the week before. Take anything away from this one?
No penalties in this game? What? Really? I mean, that's the one thing that I almost wrote about that where I was just like, wow, I can't believe there's no penalties in the game. But, you know, it was just kind of sloppy. I mean, from both teams, like Chesapeake shouldn't be scoring 13 goals a game. They should be scoring at least 15, no matter who they're playing. And they should open the game up a little bit more. I know that some of their guys in their roster are older, but their midfield is just so beastly. Why not unleash them? Like, let them go. Let them, you know, let Matt Abbott go in and take shots. You know, do that. That's what he's good at. Like, push transition. Do all that stuff. I kind of don't get why they don't do that. I mean, Michael Kimmel sometimes, I never know which Michael Kimmel is going to show up to any game. Like, he's a player that can score, like, six goals. And you're like, oh, Michael Kimmel scored six goals. Or he can get, like, one goal and two assists like he did in this game. And you're just like, oh, Michael Kimmel got one goal and two assists. Like nothing really surprises you. He's like the Tyson zone of players, you know, as far as like statistical results go. Nothing he does surprises you because he has all the potential to do all this stuff. And depending on whether or not he gets his opportunities, you know, he either gets a lot of points or a little points, you know. But I think going forward, you know, Chesapeake needs to pick a guy to kind of run everything. And that's it can't be Junior. Like, I like Junior. I've always liked Junior. I've been a huge fan. He's a legend. It can't be Junior running the show because Junior will just try crazy stuff out of nowhere. I mean, you need a guy who's a little more stable. I mean, it's not going to be Drew Westervelt. Drew Westervelt's a shooter. You know, who's it going to be? Is it Kyle Dixon? It might be Kyle Dixon. It might be Danny Gladding. But you need to pick a guy who's going to be the focal point of that offense going into the playoffs. And that has to emerge in the next three games for them to have, like, continued success.
And then finally, Denver tripling up the Charlotte Hounds 21-7, totally dominating faceoffs. When you combine that with the result last night, you know, it's easy to understand the direction that the Outlaws are headed, heading down the stretch. What, I mean, you know, not a whole lot to say here.
Awful. One of the most painful games I've ever had to watch. As like an MLL person that watches every MLL game, this is one of the worst ones I've watched in a long time. And not because of the effort or anything else. I mean, it was just complete and total absolute domination. I mean, Charlotte had... If Charlotte didn't get those late two goals from Berger and Kaminsky, it would have been 21-5. That's terrible. I mean, it was embarrassing. I mean, you could go through like tweets of like Charlotte fans and even like a couple players and they're just like, wow, that was bad. You know, like they know it's that bad. And they were on national TV. They were on ESPN too. I don't know. Did you see the article on Deadspin about the numbers for this game at all?
Yeah, John Orend, contributor or writer for Sports Business Journal, Sports Business Daily, an actual sister publication of Inside Lacrosse, provided those numbers to them. Really eye-opening. Really eye-opening. 88,000 people in total watched this game.
Yeah, and, you know, the analogy that was put up was Cine de Impacto, Rambo, First Blood, En Español, Telemundo.
Truth be told, I would be willing to bet or wouldn't be surprised if you watched that instead of this game as well, if you were one of those people.
Well, listen, DVR is there for a reason. And I'm going to tell you this. You have not lived until you've seen the first Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles film in Spanish. Las Tortugas Ninjas. Amazing. Amazing voice work. Really, really enjoyed it. But, I mean, you know, look at what time it's on. Look at other things it's against. It wasn't really against anything, but it still got crushed by Rambo First Blood in Spanish. It happens. You got to look at how much – you know, how much the media push was, not just locally, but for, you know, ESPN2 in general. How many MLL promos have you seen this year?
Like, none.
Yeah, zero. I was going to go with zero because I haven't seen any. Like, why aren't they just, like, advertising it once? Like, throw it into, like, not even the morning or the nighttime sports center. Like, the sports centers that run in the middle of the day continuously. Can't you just buy one of those ad slots? Can't they just give one of those to you? Isn't that in the TV contract? Like, how bad is the TV contract? I would love to know that. I would love to know how bad it is. Because if you're not getting any promo at all at any time of the day or night or midnight and beyond, like, how bad is it? How bad is it? Like, that should be in there. You should get one plug. They do spots for, like, bowling, you know? Like, CBS Sports Network does it. It's clearly in their contract. I've seen promos for them there. You know, if you turn on CBS Sports during the day and there's like a radio show on the, you know, one of those combo radio slash, look, I'm on the radio, but I'm talking. You can see me. I'm on TV. They have like stats for the MLL up. I've never seen that before. That's awesome. That was great. I saw that the other day for the first time.
That is wild. What show is it on during?
Like
Howard, like I said, or like
no,
SVP?
It's not for ESPN. It's for CBS Sports.
Gotcha. Like,
so it's a guy I've never heard of. But, you know, imagine if it was on CalHerd. Imagine if it was on SVP. You know, imagine that. Because it could be awesome, but it's not. You know, that's kind of the issue I have with when people – and also when people compare numbers and stuff, it's like, you know, do you really expect someone to watch that on, like, a Saturday? In one of the nicest Saturdays of the summer? Not really. You know, even I DVR'd it. I'm going to be honest. I DVR'd it. I didn't live watch that. So
it is a tough ask for sure. There's no question about it. But it is what it is. So, yeah. And then quickly just to run down the rest of the remaining parts of this week's schedule. Game tonight as, you know, Charlotte takes on – who are they taking on?
They're taking on Rochester.
Rochester. They're in Roch Vegas. That's right. All the tweets about how difficult it has been for – people to get there should have tipped me off, as well as, you know, just looking at the schedule. And then tomorrow, Hamilton, Long Island, Chesapeake, Ohio. There was a Twitter conversation between you and one of our contributors, Swanklax, Clay Hillier, who wanted to isolate a game to watch this regular season to give him an idea of the most best, exciting regular season MLL game. You pointed to last night's game as being one of the candidates. It kind of implies that they're isn't a whole lot left on the docket that gets you excited for this weekend, but what are the things that you're looking at for the remainder of the weekend?
I think, you know, tonight's going to be interesting. Charlotte's pulling out all the stops. They're not giving up. They pulled a little trickery and grabbed one of my boys, Jerry Regnese. Going to take faceoffs tonight. Good luck, Jerry. Good dude. And he's going to go against Fallon. And that's actually a pretty even matchup. I'm pretty sure those guys know each other too, so that'll be fun to watch. I mean, for me personally, I don't know if it's going to be fun to watch for everyone else, because I know both the guys. But, I mean, going down the list, Hamilton, Long Island, meh. Chesapeake, Ohio, I wouldn't recommend watching that. You know, it's a rough schedule this week. Out of all those games, probably Hamilton, Long Island has the potential to be a good game because they have better players on both teams than any of the other two teams put together. or four teams that are playing in the two games. So I would look at that one. Going, you know, just for the rest of the week. I mean, Denver, Boston, I guess it probably, it really disappointed if you were a Cannons fan, but if you're a Denver fan, you're pretty excited with that game. So it's really on what side of the dial do you fall and, where do you go with it that matters.
And then lastly, a conversation, brief conversation that falls slightly outside of the realm of an MLL conversation, but U.S. national team roster for the duel in Denver, U.S. national team versus the Canadians in Denver on September 8th. The roster was released Friday morning. At attack, we've got Ryan Boyle, Matt Tanowski, Steele Stanwyck, and Drew Westervelt. Midfield, Matt Abbott, Steven Berger, Steven Brooks, Ned Crotty, which is interesting that he's listed as a midfielder, not an attackman. Kyle Dixon, Kyle Harrison, Steven Pizer, Paul Rabel, Max Siebold, Matt Strebel. Defense, Greg Bice, Matt Bocklet, Joe Sanowski, Mike Evans, Nicky Polanco, Kyle Sweeney, Lee Zink. Goalies, Drew Adams, Jesse Schwartzman, faceoff, Chris Eck, Greg Renlian. One of the most notable exclusions from this list was Brendan Mundorf, who we spent a good portion of the top of this podcast talking about as being among the best players in the world. I've confirmed with him that he was unavailable. It wasn't a matter of getting passed over, so that's not a huge surprise there. Nothing to freak out about for you fans. Outside of that, you know, Kyle, we were talking before the podcast, just quick observations. One thing that didn't come up, who's going to play defensive midfield except for Matt Abbott? Is that just going to be Kyle Harrison's job?
I mean, I'm pretty sure Kyle Harrison would be upset if that was his job. But, I mean, Seaball can play D.
He can, but he can also be, you know.
He's also basically the second best midi all-around midfielder in the world. So.
Right.
I don't know if you want to have him do that. Let's see. I mean, Pizer can play a little D, or at least used to. But I wouldn't put Steven Brooks on D mid or Steven Berger. You know, I wouldn't do that. Strebel's been okay. I don't really know the last time he played defense in a game, but he might be able to. I don't know. I don't have a good answer for you. It's an excellent question. I don't see a lot of.
And then when you look down low, you know, this defense. There's you know, there's some meat, there's some age, you know, outside of that, I mean, what do you,
there's no speed.
No
speed.
Yeah, no speed, and no, I mean, granted, you know, it ended up being Sean Nadelin on a recovering ACL tear, who was the John Grant Jr. stopper in the 2010 World Games, and there's no apparent heir to him, as of right now. I don't know. I'm pretty curious to see how that shakes itself out because to me that's the most important question that they need to answer. Who's going to cover John Grant?
Yeah, I don't know if you want to play with this media of a line and pack it in against the Canadians. That's not a good idea. I mean, it's really not a good idea. You need to have some speed, someone that comes out and flusters the guys that can feed and the guys that pick and slip and get behind defenders. A lot of these defenders on this list have a history of getting, you know, backdoor cut pretty hard, in their careers. So I don't know. I mean, I think Lee Zink is probably going to be tasked with that. Maybe Michael Evans trying to stop, Junior, but I mean, we'll see. I mean, USA has much better goalies, better faceoff guys, better offensive talent on the midfield as far as athleticism, but I think that's the only advantages they have. Looking at this roster, I feel like Canada will definitely give them a game. And obviously everyone's been talking about the U19 U.S. team and losing to the Iroquois and Canada at the U19 championship. So, you know, maybe the world is catching up a little bit, as far as that goes, but you know, we'll see in this game. I mean, I think you need to try some new faces, especially down low.
The dream team made world basketball better. We'll see how much Canada winning the 2006 World Games has made international lacrosse better. You know, certainly a lot of intrigue. The MLL and the NBA both playing large roles in the expansion of their games, I'm sure. Kyle Devitt, that'll do it for this issue of the MLL podcast. We will come back next week. We'll probably have a guest, and we look forward to catching up with you then.
Fantastic. Thanks a lot.
Inside Lacrosse Podcast.